So when I was in high school, I tried out for cheerleading. And it was the start of my 12th grade year. And I had started at a new school partway through the year before. And I got talked into this by my group of friends, who coincidentally were all varsity cheerleaders, and sort of envisioned this as, hey, this will be fun, because all these times we're hanging out and you're not there, you can be there. And they, despite my initial skepticism, they sort of convinced me of my own potential. I'm like, we'll be with you every step of the way. So we did, the week of afternoon sort of tryout training. It was a whole week of like learning things, and then you had the tryouts. And so we would do this after school, and then we would go, to someone's house, and we would practice some more, and we would work on these routines. And one of the things that we spent more time practicing than I had really only been thinking about the physical aspect of it. But one of the things we had to practice was voice, because it's not just learning the physical routines, and it's not just learning the words to the cheers. It's how you say it. So imagine you ask me a question just here in the back of the church, right? And I answer like, I don't know, right? And I end on this down, which communicates a lot versus, I don't know. And this is a thing that we had to apply to all the words. You needed to end on an upbeat because, I don't know, there's some doubt. Are we going to win? I don't know. So there's doubt, or maybe I think it's a bad idea, or like, what are I don't know, why are you asking me? Or, I don't know. I don't know the answer, but let's find out. I bet we can find out. What a good idea. So we had to practice voice. And we all love a good underdog story, right? And this isn't it, because I did not, I was not a cheerleader. All right. Man, I tried. I'm really glad that I lived in a day where video footage doesn't exist of things, right? So many of us were so fortunate, and I am so sorry to the world that the kids are growing up in these days. But I tried. I did not make the team. I probably did not even come close to making the team. But for some reason, this voice thing has kind of always stuck with it. And when I think of it the most, when it kind of comes to my mind the most, it's usually in regard to the church and to our faith journeys. Because we do this. We do it to ourselves. We do it to each other. We get uncomfortable with a faith journey that doesn't end on the upbeat. Even the part of limitations that I gave, I will say, like, I struggled with where to end it. Because what I really wanted to focus on was the first part. And even in the fact that I knew I'd be talking about this, I was too uncomfortable starting without the second part, right? Without the therefore I have hope. And also, I like you guys, and also I knew I would get even more eye rolls from Seth if I didn't, so. But it's been ingrained in us as a sign of faith. Do we have enough faith? Can we end on the upbeat, even when things are hard? It's okay to lament, but not for too long. There was a years long period of my life, starting around late 2018, early 2018 probably, where the first part, where Lamentations 3 was the only scripture in this entire book that I could engage with. That was it. That was it. And one verse from Joel, sweet Joel, one verse. I don't know how I found it, but that one verse. And Lamentations, that was it. And I'm not exaggerating. And it's not that I didn't try. Like, I was in the dark stuff, the stuff that I didn't even give you the fullness of it here, right? Because Lamentations 3 starts with, I am the one who's seen affliction under the rod of God's wrath. He has driven me and brought me into darkness without any light. He's made me sit in darkness like the dead. I'm not even reading all of it to you guys. You guys are getting excerpts. He has walled me about so that I cannot escape. I cry out for help, and he shuts my prayer. He has made my path crooked. He has led me off my way and tore me to pieces. He has made me desolate. He has filled me with bitterness. My soul is bereft of peace. I have forgotten what happiness is. But as soon as I reached the words, but this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope, the start of the upbeat, it was like my breath would leave me. I couldn't go on. I would try to say it out loud, and my voice would catch, and I couldn't make the words come out. I couldn't do it silently in my head. I couldn't do it with my voice. I was in the darkest part of that lament, and that is the only part I could sit in. On a physical and spiritual level, it was only the shared grief of a life that had been reduced to ash and splinters that brought me any level of connection with God. Having grief that mirrored my grief was where, it was the only place I could sit. Because in that point in my life, I had seen affliction. I had been made to sit in darkness. I was walled in without an escape. I couldn't get back the life that I had built, that I wanted, that I had had. I was filled with bitterness. Gone was everything I had hoped for in the Lord. These words in Lamentation were written in raw grief. They were written following the destruction, not only of a beloved nation, but an entire way of life with no way back to it. You can't undo trauma. You can't undo loss. The land that God had promised the people was gone. God's promise, the land God had promised, was gone. The temple, where God's presence dwelled as a sign of being with the people, was gone. Social structures, gone. Community culture, gone. The people were scattered. Some were trying to now carve out a new life within the rubble, the physical rubble, and some were in exile, a place that they did not want to be. They were there against their will. And this was the only place in this entire book I could find connection with God. This was it. I couldn't move forward. It felt inauthentic. This was it. For years, when I opened my Bible, this was the only, it's underlined. I don't do a lot of underlining, so I mean, it is like, for that to be what's underlined. That was it. When I open my Bible, if this is the passage that almost, you know, sort of flops open, this is where it goes. And at some point, I stopped trying to read the next line. I stopped trying to move forward. And I just made friends with the dark. I just curled up and I rested in the dark. And I didn't let it bother me anymore that I couldn't move forward. And I trusted that it was okay to be exactly where I was. Because God is in the dark too. And it's us that feel discomfort when a voice doesn't end on the upbeat. It's us that feels that darkness indicates defeat, either now or imminently. But if we can't sit in the dark and know that we are safe, where is our faith? Like, what is our faith actually built on? If we have to end on an upbeat, when there is no upbeat in front of us. So Kat Armas is a writer that I love, and in her book, Sacred Belonging, she writes, "To those who have embraced an imperial Christ, grief is weakness." In her word, in Kat's words, grief has nothing to do with a victorious God. Grief only occurs in times of deep loss or vulnerability, which are the exact times that we need reassurance that God triumphs in the end, that love is greater than evil, life is greater than death, our hope is not misplaced, and so we force ourselves into an upbeat that maybe just isn't there right now, that is not authentic. Jeremiah tells God's people in exile not to struggle against this new reality. They're not supposed to fight to find a way back. He instructs them to build houses there in the dark, to settle down, to plant gardens, and to eat what those gardens produce. God tells them to let go and build a life in this new reality that is painful and not what they want. Now, I chose this weeks ago. This was always what I was going to talk about, but this past week especially, again, times feel dark, and I didn't choose this because this was already here, because welcome to the inside of my head. I'm not the only one I know that looked around at the landscape of the world, of the nation, of the church this week, and that I don't recognize this place. I'm exhausted with wondering how old spiritual mentors or people I love can think so differently than I do on what it means to live like Jesus in the world. And every time I see another one say something or align themselves with someone that I can't fathom, that grief is there again, right? We are in the dark. I admit full darkness to understanding this, to understanding this world we are in. But as scary as the darkness is, being willing to just rest there is an act of faith. I don't need to force an upbeat to prove anything to anyone, including myself. Because here's the thing that I knew, and I knew it then, and I know it now, is that even in the years that I could not bring myself to read those verses, to read the turn, to read the upbeat, they were there. And the promise in them was not dependent on me being able to engage with them. Making a home when life is unrecognizable, a place that we can sit, a place that we can be with each other, a place that we can talk and eat and share meals, that is an act of faith that God is still ultimately in control and is faithful and is good. And we plant gardens not just to build a life and sustain ourselves while we wait in darkness, but because we believe that this is not the end. You don't plant a garden if there will not be time for that seed to grow. And we continue to seek the goodness of those around us while we wait in the dark, because we still believe, even in the dark, that there's goodness to be had. There is an upbeat, even when we can't engage with it and we don't have to force it, when we don't want to, because the Lord is good to those who wait for him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the Lord will not reject forever. Amen. I'll be happier next time. Maybe.